Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Why does so much good food in America end up filling trash cans instead of bellies? And what can we change about the way we produce, distribute, buy, and serve food to ensure less of it goes to waste? A report issued last week by the Natural Resources Defense Council estimates the United States throws out about $165 billion worth of edible food every year, or a stunning 40% of what is produced. And all that discarded nutrition also means we are blowing through water, energy, and labor that we can scarcely afford to waste. Dana Gunders is food and agriculture project scientist at the NRDC and author of the report Wasted: How America is Losing Up to 40% of Its Food from Farm to Fork to Landfill. You can find it online at nrdc.org. Dana, welcome to Think.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So talk about this amount of food that we waste and how you go about calculating that for an entire country.
Well, the estimate that it's 40% that never gets eaten comes from a report by the National Institute of Health, actually. And what they did is they took all of the calories in our food supply. So after imports and exports, they have a sense of how much there is in terms of nutrition. And they also compared that with the amount of food that is eaten and they know is consumed. And that differential came out to about 40%.
Hmm. And your report gives the example of walking out of a store with a few bags of groceries, dropping one, and then simply just shrugging and leaving it behind as you head for home.
That's right. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but that's essentially what we're doing in our food system. And, you know, there are certain amount of losses are unavoidable, but there are, I think, a lot of gains that can be made by drawing a little more attention to the issue.
I was really surprised to read that the figure had gone up 50% since the 1970s, and then it occurred to me we sure do eat out a lot more than we did back then.
It's true. Portion sizes have probably not coincidentally risen alongside the same timeline, and so we're seeing portions in restaurants today that are 2 to 8 times the serving size that's recommended by government agencies.
8 times. But I think everybody's been served something and thought, wow, if I had the rest of the family here, we could dine very well on this one plate.
Exactly.
We'll talk about restaurants more, but I want to talk about production, because it would seem that farmers and ranchers would want to sell every single calorie they raise. Is it market conditions that make that not feasible?
It is often market conditions. You know, there's a couple things going on. One is that we've become accustomed to very high standards for how our produce looks.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about, you know, oranges or apples in the grocery store, they never have a scar on them. They are always kind of perfectly round and perfectly red. And of course, that's not how they grow on the tree. And so what that does is it reduces the price that a farmer can get for some of those cosmetically challenged, or I like to call them funny fruit. And at the same time, market prices fluctuate. And so sometimes what can happen is that market prices are quite low and they don't even cover what it would cost the farmer to harvest the produce. And therefore the farmer, you know, has no choice but to just leave the, you know, fruits or veggies unharvested in the field. So you can have entire fields of lettuce, for instance, that just never get harvested.
And it makes sense that something like apples, if they don't look perfect, they can be used to make a processed product, applesauce or something else. But you can't do that with something like lettuce. There's really only one way to use it.
It's true. Mm-hmm. I mean, you think about, you know, bent cucumbers or, it really depends on the product. But you're right. You know, some have a lot of uses and those that don't are really the ones we're likely going to see more losses.
So what about the processing stage? How does food get lost there? I mean, we know things get peeled and all that, but is there a lot of edible food really being thrown out besides, not that you can't eat the peels, but besides just removing what we don't eat?
I think that's probably in processing and also distribution are the most efficient, I would say, of the whole supply chain. It's, you know, they have a very natural incentive to be using everything that they can. Still, what we see is, you know, if you're, let's say, producing Slim Jims and you have to cut them to fit into the little packet, there will be ends and pieces that don't make it into that. Trader Joe's even sells the little ends and pieces of their fruit roll-up bars.
Yeah.
You do see some of those ends and pieces. And then with fresh products that also do get processed to some extent because they get packaged and handled that way, they'll have overruns. So that's another thing that we see are overrun products where they have to estimate how much they'll need, and they're often within a few percent, but even those few percent add up to hundreds of thousands of pounds of product.
I had never really thought about this before, but it is true that pretty much every grocery store you go into in this country always has a fully stocked produce department. It never looks like they're about to run out of apples or bananas or whatever else.
Right. Nobody wants to buy. What the grocery industry has sort of figured out is that nobody wants to buy the last apple in the bin.
Like there must be something wrong with it.
Yeah, right. So the flip side of that is that they feel that people buy more when they have this sense of abundance. And mm-hmm. So when you walk into that produce department and everything is just piled really high, they think that helps sell more. Of course, what that also does is mean there's a bunch of product at the bottom of the pile that's not getting purchased and can spoil. And there's also people out in the produce section constantly rotating that fruit and handling it, and the more product gets handled, the more it can spoil. So there's actually a great example that occurred with the company Stop and Shop, which is a large grocery chain, and they took a look at they took a very close look at all of their perishables, and they analyzed their sales for each type, and they realized, first of all, we don't need 25 different varieties of tomatoes, because if we went down to 12 different varieties, people would still be happy. And so they eliminated a bunch of their offerings without the customers even really noticing. And then they also used different display techniques so that they weren't piling that product so high. And they found what happened was their sales actually rose because of that, because customers were finding that the produce was much fresher.
So it would seem like everybody would want to do what Stop and Shop has done. Are there disincentives to that?
It's a great question, and I'm not sure I have the answer. I know that, you know, this doctrine of what they say, pile them high, watch them fly, is quite indoctrinated into the grocery mindset. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's probably, you know, the inertia there is probably what's keeping others from doing it. And we have seen more, you know, I know Walmart has gone to a different display for some of their stores where they don't have nearly as much product in the displays.
Another thing that I've read about that I don't think I saw in your report is those vegetable sprayers, you know, where you come in and suddenly there's this tape recording of thunder playing and then this mist comes out, that actually, it might make us think something's very fresh, but in fact it actually rots the produce faster.
Yeah, you know, that makes perfect sense, and it's not something I've looked into, but I think you're probably right.
Okay, so let's talk about those use-by, sell-by, best-by, freshest-by dates. This is something that I gather makes you crazy.
It does. It should make everyone crazy, yeah. Actually. You know, a lot of people believe that those dates mean food has gone bad after that date. So mm-hmm. We have people all across the country who look at the date, they say the yogurt, you know, it says June 22nd on the yogurt, today's June 23rd, I'm going to throw it out. But actually what those dates mean is that the product is supposed to be at its best quality at that date. So most products are not federally regulated for their dates, and the actual language is that it's supposed to be a manufacturer suggestion for peak quality. And most products can be consumed, you know, after that date.
I think the lack of federal regulation is probably something that a lot of people are unaware of. We just assume that somebody in charge is setting standards for how things are labeled.
I know, and I was really surprised when I first found that out, and I know it's surprising, you know, I'm sure, to your listeners and everyone else out there.
So if they're only guidelines for peak freshness, what are we to do? Is it okay to buy, you know, a yogurt that's on its last day and then keep it at home for a week or 10 days?
It sure is. And some products have two dates. So there are sell-by dates, which are supposed to, which is the manufacturer instructing the store as to when they think it should be sold, the product should be sold, so that it can have a certain amount of shelf life in the consumer's home. Because, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, if you bought yogurt and it went bad the next day, you'd be upset. So
right.
So that's the manufacturer working with the grocery store to tell them, here's about when you should sell this by so your consumers will be happy and have enough shelf life. So those actually really don't indicate when a product is bad. I mean, they're designed to make sure the product does have shelf life. Then we have use by, best by, and you know, you see enjoy by and guaranteed fresh by, and there's no standardization of the language, and all of those are really suggestions, and so it can be consumed after typically.
And I guess from the perspective of the producer of that food in particular, they're, in a way, they have a reason to not care if it gets eaten or not once you have purchased it.
It's true. You know, the average family of four is spending up to $2,200 or so on food that they're not eating, and that money is going back into the food industry. So there is, you know, an incentive there that the food industry or businesses just like anyone else, and they'd like to sell as much of their product as they can. I don't necessarily believe that they're gaming those dates. I think there's some tension because the grocery store wants the product to have, you know, be dated kind of as late as possible so that the product has, you know, the consumers feel like they have a long time and the product is fresh and they can eat it for quite some time. So I'm not sure that those are inaccurate, but I think they are conservative.
And one thing that you think we could do to change that is to sort of code those dates that are meant for use only in the supermarket so that they're not apparent to consumers, so that we don't have to sort of worry our heads over the date that the grocery store needs to worry about.
That's right. So in the United Kingdom, they've actually moved to a new system there. And I think this, you know, it would be smart for us to follow suit. And what they've done there is they've discouraged the use of sell-by dates whatsoever, so that the stores and the manufacturers working together to have that freshness do it through codes as opposed to dates that might confuse consumers. And then when they do use a date, they've standardized the language so that use-by actually does mean the product is not safe to eat after that date, whereas if they use best-by, that is just indicating quality and the product can be consumed beyond that date.
It's funny, Dana, that we seem to have lost all confidence in our own ability to sniff something, to take a look at something, to take a tiny bite of something and know this is good to eat or it's not.
It's true. I've gotten all sorts of comments saying, you've saved my marriage because I've been telling my wife that the yogurt is fine. And I agree. And I think, you know, we're the people eating it. And I really believe that we have the senses to know when food is bad for the most part. Now, you know, with meat, I think it's a little bit different and things like that. But I do encourage for certainly dairy products and people to use the sniff test. And you know, we can cut the mold off the cheese and it's fine. And we can cut the little bruise off the apple and eat the rest of it.
Dana Gunders is my guest. She's food and agriculture project scientist at the Natural Resources Defense Council and author of the report Wasted, How America is Losing Up to 40% of Its Food from Farm to Fork to Landfill. You can check that out online at nrdc.org. If you'd like to join the conversation, tell us your stories of food waste or not. Call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Classes are available in everything from fine arts to personal finance. Fall registration is now open. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Thank on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Dana Gunders. She is Food and Agriculture Project Scientist at the Natural Resources Defense Council and author of the report Wasted, How America is Losing Up to 40% of Its Food. You can join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or by emailing think@kera.org. So I was interested to read, Dana, that of the broad categories, dairy stuff gets wasted the least on the consumer level and vegetables get wasted the most. And I'm not sure of the reason for this, but it occurred to me that most people are pretty careful about not overbuying dairy. You buy just what you can use in the next few days or so.
Yeah, that's true. You know, dairy doesn't take preparation often. And I think it's something that's part of our habitual, you know, it's the milk in our coffee or our cereal, yogurt we eat. Whereas, you know, fruits and vegetables do take preparation, which takes time. And it, as you pointed out, sometimes we're running off to a restaurant to go out to eat or unplanned.
Yeah. And what do you think is the story? I guess vegetables, simply, they need to be cooked, and we buy them with these great intentions of introducing the kids to Brussels sprouts, and then a week goes by, and then we haven't done it. Is that what happens?
I do think that is part of what happens, absolutely.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. You can also email think@kera.org. We hear here from Logan in Dallas, who says, can you comment on how grocery stores are notorious for throwing away, for example, a crate of food because there's one with a fly or a scratch or mold? They throw the whole bunch away when it's one item causing an issue. I assume they do it because it's cheaper than risking a customer getting sick and, worst case, dying and suing the company.
Yeah, I know with eggs, for instance, that there are some rules about when you can sell eggs, and there's dates. Those dates can be regulated in certain states, and so if one egg is cracked, they can't just take an egg out of another pack because there's coating associated with the pack of eggs, and so when one egg's cracked, they sort of throw the whole dozen away because of that. I don't know actually how much that extends to all products, but I would guess that when there is some kind of mold or something, they do fear that that has spread to some of the other produce, for instance.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's speak to Lisa in Fort Worth. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you.
Great, quick question for you. There are usually numbers, speaking of eggs, at the end of the carton, and then there's also date. And I was told, and I just really, I guess, wanted the verification, does that number that's on there is the date that the eggs actually went into the carton?
That's
in other words, if it was day number, you know, 100, and it was the 100th day of the year, then that's what they put on there.
That could be. I know that eggs... The federal rules around eggs is that they need to include information on their pack date, which I think is what you're referring to, and that the sell-by date has to be within 45 days of that pack date. So often that pack date is a code, and it would, you know, it could be that they do it the way you're describing, though I'm not positive about that.
What did you learn about why restaurants put so much food in a particular serving? It would seem like their bottom line would fare better if they didn't overstuff plates with more than almost anybody can possibly finish in a sitting.
You know, for restaurants, a lot of their cost is not the actual food, but rather the labor and also the real estate. And so they can get higher prices. You know, they want their customers to feel like they're getting good value, but they also want to be able, they need to be able to charge a certain price in order to stay in business. And so it makes most sense for them oftentimes, depending on their business model, to serve, you know, to add more spaghetti to the plate, or sometimes there'll be, you know, some of those lower cost items that fill the plate up so that the customer feels like they're getting a good value. And of course, we have a role to play in that too, right? Because anyone who's been to a very fancy restaurant and paid $30 for an entree that's tiny, the first thing you think is, gosh, I'm paying $30 for this small serving. So we have these expectations going in there as well.
Did you learn anything about, you know, the percentage of people who will take home their food from a fancy restaurant or from any restaurant if they haven't finished it, and the people who just let it get thrown away?
Yeah, the numbers I've seen, of course, the data here is really sparse, and I don't think there's a great understanding of what's happening both in people's homes and as they eat in restaurants. It's a difficult thing to study. But what I've seen is that about 17% of food gets left on the plate, and only about half the diners out there actually take food home as leftovers.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also get to us via email to think@kera.org. Let's go next on the phone to Hans in Dallas. Hi, Hans.
Hello, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
I just wanted to comment on how when living in New York City, I was working in restaurants and I noticed that dairy products had two different dates, sometimes as many as 10 days apart. And the health department would fine you if you did not have it gone by the NY state date versus the national date. So a lot of dairy went into the trash for that reason.
Hmm. And I guess, again, thanks for your call. I guess, again, yeah. Dana, that really points to the fact that these things, if you're a buyer, a consumer, how are you supposed to know what to do with either date? And maybe you think that the sooner date is more accurate?
Right, and that just it makes it even more confusing that different states have different rules around the dates. So when we were talking about regulations, you know, we were talking about federal regulations, but different states do regulate certain products, and those regulations are different. For instance, we were talking about eggs just a moment ago, and that there's a 45-day requirement to have a sell-by date federally that's 45 days within the pack date. In California, the requirement is that it's 30 days within the pack date. So, you know, sometimes they're conflicting.
Is it pretty typical that once a food is pretty close to the end of its usable life, we can pop it in the freezer and keep it for much longer?
Yes, absolutely. I think we are way underutilizing our freezers. You know, it's probably not going to happen that our lifestyles change enough that we don't go out to dinner just because there's food in the fridge all the time, but we can put almost anything in the freezer, and when we don't get around to using it in time, and we'll be able to use it later. Then you just have to remember to look in your freezer.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next on the phone to Joe calling from Allen. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I'd like to ask about two waste streams. We know about restaurant food. There's always a lot of leftovers that ends up in the trash. And also a lot of supermarkets, when food has expired or vegetables are no longer pretty to look at, they end up tossing those in the trash. Couldn't those items be cleaned and radiated and maybe given away to families, needy families or shelters?
Absolutely. Well, for restaurants are in a little bit of a different situation. There are some health code rules around when they can donate items or not. Typically, when it's in their kitchens, they can. And when it's been served, they can't. So that makes things like buffets very wasteful because they can't actually donate any of that food. Supermarkets could be donating that food, absolutely. And a lot of them may be, you know, individual businesses may be concerned about their liability associated with that, but there is actually a law out there on the books that protects any business donating food, as long as it's with good intent, from liability associated with health issues with whom the food was donated to. So they certainly can be, and some of them are, and it's just one of those things that's sort of an extra thing on the to-do list at the end of the day when you're closing shop. And so it's easier, really, to throw the food out. And I certainly would encourage those grocery stores and restaurants out there to find the local resources for food rescue and start participating. One more thing to note on that is that there is an enhanced tax deduction that's given for food donations to large corporations. It was temporarily given to small businesses, but then that expired. And so right now in Congress, they're considering extending that temporary provision, but it's not permanent. And I think a permanent enhanced tax deduction for small businesses to donate food would go a long way because it would help them plan, you know, on a stable tax deduction.
Are there different sort of profiles of food waste at home depending on what your living situation is, meaning single or married with no kids or married with kids?
Yes. Kids certainly add to the waste toll. As anyone with kids probably knows, it's challenging. And I would love to see more resources out there for parents to help them figure out, you know, how do I get my kid to eat? You want to give them the offering so that they can try new foods, but without wasting so much. Single people actually also waste quite a bit of food. I think it's challenging to live alone, and they're often going out to dinner at the last minute and have things wasted in their fridge.
Yeah, it occurred to me also, you know, school is starting in this part of the country this week, and school cafeterias struggle with food waste all the time.
It's true. I've seen numbers around 40% in school lunches as well. And of course, now we have so much effort going into getting healthy foods into our schools, but of course, if the kids aren't eating it, it's not healthy till you eat it.
Yeah.
And a couple of the suggestions I've heard on school lunches and encouraging children to eat more of their school lunches are to move recess before lunch. That often lunch happens early in the day. They don't have a lot of time to eat. And so that simply, and they're, of course, excited to get out to recess. And that putting recess before lunch will help them get some of that energy out, maybe increase their appetite, and also have them not anxious to finish eating so that they can get out and play.
That seems like such a simple fix.
It does, but I'm not a principal, so I don't know what it means for the rest of the school schedule.
Oh, maybe we'll hear from some educators who had 5 minutes to listen to the show today, and they can let us know their perspective on that. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next on the phone with Arthur in Dallas. Hello, Arthur.
Hello there. Just kind of curious. My first question, I guess, was along the lines of, you know, how much is it a question of culture in the United States in terms of either, you know, apparent freshness versus not worried about wastage? And, of course, the way to conquer that is something called the price mechanism. But the U.S. has been locked into a cheap food policy for, I don't know, 40 years or so. And I'm just wondering, is there, without altering that price mechanism, which of course would get to things like raising the tax on all the fuel to either farm or to move the food around, such that it, you know, becomes more expensive, hence more precious, and as such something people don't want to waste? Or can you do you think you can affect culturally people's attitude about food without adjusting that price mechanism?
Great question. What do you think, Dana?
I think it's a great point, and I do believe that for many people in this country, not all, of course, food is a low portion of their budget, and it simply is easier to just waste it than change any of the other behavioral things that are leading to that waste. And I also believe that, you know, if prices rose, we probably would see less waste. If you look at developing countries where food is a much larger portion of people's budgets, you see much less waste on the consumer end. For instance, the average American consumer, at the consumer level, wastes about 10 times more food than someone in Southeast Asia.
Wow. And of course, it stands to reason that we're wasting not only the usable food product, but whatever time and effort and resources went into producing this product. So fuel and water and labor.
It's true. I mean, we invest a huge portion of our natural resources in the U.S. towards producing food. It's over half of our land area goes to food production. About 80% of the water that is consumed, of the fresh water that's actually consumed, goes to agriculture. And a huge amount of energy, about 10% of our energy budget, also goes to producing food. So when you think about how that translates, and that's to say nothing of what it takes to transport and cool and process and distribute and cook the food. So it really is a huge amount of resources, and I don't think we've been thinking of it that way, and therefore it's been flying under our radar as consumers that, gosh, when you toss that sandwich out, you're actually tossing out about a whole bunch of embedded water and energy and chemical use as well. So it's something to think about for sure.
Back to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. Remember, you can also email think@kera.org. We have Janet on the line now in Dallas. Hi, Janet.
Hi. One thing that I'm wondering is that I've been places that say, we'll make, let's say, a salad for you, and you say, well, I want tomatoes, I want this type of lettuce, and et cetera, et cetera. And I've noticed that, like, if they get to the kind of the end of the, say, lettuce, they throw it out. And I've asked, well, can I use that for my compost? And they say, no, we're not allowed to give you that for your compost. Now, I'm sure that's true, like, with grocery stores that throw out vegetables and things. You know, I've just never asked, but... but a lot of that we could be composting for those of us who have gardens, and otherwise we have to go buy compost.
What do you think, Dana?
I agree. It would be great to see more of the waste composted. You know, right now food scraps are the largest contributor to our landfills in this country, period. And only about 3% of all the food scraps out there are composted. So there's certainly room for improvement there. As to why they're not allowed, you know, I'm not sure. It may be just a company policy because they're worried about liability in one way or another. You'd have to ask them.
Dana Gunders is with us. She's Food and Agriculture Project Scientist at the Natural Resources Defense Council and author of the report Wasted, How America is Losing Up to 40% of Its Food from Farm to Fork to Landfill. You can check it out online at nrdc.org. We'll be back to the conversation in a couple of minutes. If you'd like to join us, you can get on the line now at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Classes are available in everything from fine arts to personal finance. Fall registration is now open. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Dana Gunders of the Natural Resources Defense Council. She's the author of a new report called Wasted, How America is Losing Up to 40% of Its Food from Farm to Fork to Landfill. Join us by sending email to think@kera.org. That's where we hear from Karen in Arlington, who writes, my issue is the prepackaged produce that limits my ability to buy just the quantity I need. Spinach, grapes, etc. are all in fixed quantities more than our empty nest needs.
It's true. You know, I mean, prepackaged stuff it's challenging in some of those, like, cut carrots and ready-to-go broccoli, I think, are encouraging people to eat more veggies, and that's a good thing. And sometimes they're actually making use of some of that cosmetically challenged product at the farm. You know, the bent carrots get turned into baby carrots. So sometimes it's actually good utilization, but it is hard when they're that size. I would say a lot of that you can freeze. So make sure to use your freezer. You can use it in smoothies, and just try not to buy so much of it at once so that, you know, when you're buying your spinach, you don't also buy lettuce, that sort of thing.
So I have to confess, when I'm reading all this, I think, well, this doesn't happen in our house. And I have four kids, middle school age, so they're sort of like locusts in our kitchen, and we don't throw a lot away. But I'm certainly guilty of picking only the prettiest apples when I'm at the grocery store. I mean, do you think the problem, Dana, is that all of us think somebody else is wasting food, but not us?
I think the problem is that no one's really been thinking about wasting food yet. And so I really believe that awareness can go a long way, and that just having it on our radar will naturally help us reduce some of our waste at home. Now, I can say, as someone who's been very aware of this for a while now, I'm still finding myself wasting food at home, and it's hard. It takes a lot of organization and planning, and you can't knock yourself for every bit that goes into the compost.
Do you find it helpful to shop more often rather than less often?
I do, absolutely. And buying smaller quantities. You know, as the last commenter said, sometimes it's hard. You need to buy a whole bottle of ketchup. You can't get, the smaller ones. But I do think going in there with a realistic sense of what we're going to need is one thing. And then also, if you plan your meals so that you know you're going to have extra product. For instance, you buy cilantro to make salsa. Maybe the next day you can cook a fish that also uses cilantro.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's speak with Steve in Denton. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Hello, how are you?
Great, thank you.
Yeah, I heard a comment by a previous caller about perhaps artificially raising the price of food, but I think that would really be disastrous. I think it's quite a blessing to live in a place where either we grow it or our distribution is so great that we do have an abundance of food that might be wasted on occasion, even up to the point of 40%. But if you raise the price of food, can you imagine what would happen with all that food that first year that no one would buy? I mean, that would be totally wasteful. And if it were made something that was ongoing, then the production would go down. And then we'd have a condition where food would actually become rare or scarce. It might just be something that we all have to be conscious about, but something that we all just have to live with. As a father of a five-year-old who was a three-year-old, we all know that they don't eat all the food that you put in front of them. And, there's just a certain amount of waste that happens.
Yeah, I appreciate your point. Thanks very much for your call. And it is true, Dana, that a lot of people in this country struggle to afford the food that, by and large, we consider cheap in America.
It's true. About 1 in 6 Americans are what they call food insecure, which means that at some point during the year, they don't know where they're going to get food from. And I agree. Raising prices has a lot of implications. Right now, prices are artificially low with government subsidies, but anything that would raise those prices for it, like the drought, will likely do. We'll likely see rising food prices because of that. And it can put more people into that food insecure category. So I agree that we need to be, just raising prices to raise prices is not necessarily the answer. And starting with consciousness is a much better way to go. And frankly, making sure businesses are increasing their food donations so that some of those who are currently food insecure get that food. The back of the envelope estimate we've done is that if 15% of the food waste were reduced, if we reduced our food waste by 15%, that would be enough food equivalent to feeding 25 million Americans.
Wow, that's really astonishing.
Yeah.
We have an email here from Steve who writes, "It seems even more food may be wasted than what is thrown away, since eating too much is, in essence, wasting food." What do you think about that?
I think that's true. Our food consumption has increased over time. We talked about serving sizes a little bit before. The average cookie is now has 4 times as many calories as it did in the 80s.
Wow. Well, they're bigger, right? Some of them are like the size of your head.
Yeah, right. I mean, I remember making cookies as a kid, and they were just, cookies. You could put 12 of them on a baking sheet, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's happening across the board. Pizza slices are 70% bigger, et cetera. So we're eating a lot. And, we here at NRDC, we're an environmental organization. We want to see the food go to its best use. But I know that the whole public health community is certainly concerned about obesity and increased consumption. So that's another important issue.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Terry on the line next in Dallas. Hi, Terry.
Good day. I just have a comment question. comment is that there's a lost cost in our food, meaning that food is energy. We purchase a lot of food that's probably doesn't have the energy or in our calories that it could otherwise have, and we overpay perhaps even for the packaging. Now, compare that with or contrast that with the foods that do have energies and are the best buy for the buck, you see. Let me hope that's not too complicated, but we lose in buying foods that are not as energetic. We overpay for those foods.
So in other words, we're buying, I think what Terry's maybe saying is we're buying a lot of food and eating a lot of food that doesn't really do our bodies much good when we don't eat things maybe that are better for us. Do you want to respond to that, Dana?
I'm not a nutritionist. I think certainly everyone should be eating as healthy as they can, and marketing does play a bigger part into our diets than it probably should. So certainly, being wise about what you're eating is a good idea.
Another thing that I think came up in the report is these deals where it's like normally you would be buying one package of string cheese or whatever, but you get three for $5 or something. And so you buy three times more than you needed. And ultimately, most people aren't able to eat that much more.
It's true. I mean, buy one, get one free is the classic promotion that you see in a grocery store. And sometimes it's a great deal if that's a product you really use a lot of and can get to use in time. When it's a gallon of milk and all of a sudden you have 2 gallons of milk, that's where I think it does lead to some waste. And there are actually grocers in the UK, in the United Kingdom, who are playing around with different kinds of promotions, such as buy one, get one later, or buy one, give one free, where they donate a gallon of milk for every gallon that gets purchased.
What a great idea.
Yeah.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Sandra in Greenville. Hi, Sandra.
Hi. I just wanted to say, I went to Europe recently, and I noticed they seem to have a food shortage over there, too. And the portions they give you for in restaurants are very small compared to American portions, and very expensive the food is. Maybe that's what we need to do here. We have too much of a good thing. This is a land of plenty, and it's too much of a good thing that is actually hurting us. Maybe we do need to raise the food prices so that we can appreciate food more. If it was more expensive, think about it. Would you be still eating the same quantities of food?
And there's also the question, Dana, of whether or not, in a restaurant, at least we could say, I'm not going to want this much. Just leave it off my plate. I mean, is that a reasonable strategy? Will most kitchens accommodate that?
I think most will. And often kitchens will also accommodate if you want to order a half order. And one thing I would like to see more of in restaurants are flexible portions. So, that you can order an appetizer size as your meal if that's what you'd like, or something of that nature. But even if they don't have that on the menu, if you ask for it, some restaurants will accommodate that. And also leaving the sides off, if you see potatoes and you don't like potatoes, either ask for a substitute that you do like, or just ask them to leave it off.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak with Mary in Dallas. Hi, Mary.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you.
A great show, great topic. I just wanted to comment. I've lived in numerous states, and I was born and raised in Seattle, and they have an excellent program for using compost and recyclables and waste. And I would love to see, I live in Texas, Oklahoma last, and I would love to see these states start to incorporate this method, because in Seattle, they separate their compost, they separate their recyclables, and you are limited on your actual waste products. And if you go over your allowable waste products, you actually get charged more.
It's an interesting strategy for combating the problem, is to sort of add a penalty for wasting food at the consumer level, Dana.
It's true, and I've heard suggestions of, what if we had a ban on food in landfills, that we weren't allowed to put food in landfills, that it had to be composted, and that might raise the cost of throwing your food out a little bit more. I think at this point we are seeing compost programs increasing throughout the country, and it's up to us to go to our municipalities and our waste management companies and ask them for that if that's what we want. If it's not available near you, home composting is an option if you have the space for it, and certainly if you like to garden, it's a good thing to do. And I hope to see more composting in the future.
And I think some people are put off by the idea that you have to, like, buy a composting system. And, in fact, I can tell you from personal experience, and I'm sure you know this, you can easily set up a system of your own for, like, $10 or less.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
So talk about the response that you've had to this report. I mean, it's gotten a lot of play in the media. I think people are talking about this. Have you heard anything that you didn't expect from people?
Not really. I think, you know, while this has flown under our radar, it's something that everyone understands. And so the media response, which has been tremendous, just goes to speak to all the interest that there is out there in this issue. And I think people really understand it and think it's important. I've actually really enjoyed the way different coverage has kind of taken it and run with it and gone into, you know, for instance, a pizza restaurant that had that brands itself by having the biggest piece of pizza that nobody can finish and interviewing everybody and asking them they're going to finish their pizza, things like that. So I think it's been fun to see the way that people have taken this issue and made it their own.
So we talked earlier about perhaps shopping more often, being more mindful of what you can actually finish. Any other sort of takeaway tips that you would leave people with?
Well, again, just learning when your food goes bad. Making sure to use your freezer and just being realistic about what you're cooking and buying. There are portion planners out there that can help you know how much to cook for a certain number of people. I think we're particularly apt to do this at parties where mm-hmm. we want everyone to feel like there's plenty of food. So making sure your guests are taking food home. And there's a great website out there called Love Food Hate Waste that has a lot of tips. You can go in and put in whatever's in your fridge and it will come back to you with recipes that you can cook.
Dana Gunders is Food and Agriculture Project Scientist at the Natural Resources Defense Council, and she's author of the report Wasted, How America is Losing Up to 40% of Its Food from Farm to Fork to Landfill. You can find the whole thing online at nrdc.org. Dana, thank you so much for joining us this hour.
Thank you so much, Chris, for having me. It was great to be here.
Today's show was engineered by Shelley Canavy. Joe Bellotti answers the phones. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. Jeff Whittington is senior producer. Learn more about Think and find out about upcoming programs online at kera.org/think, where you can also download the podcast for free every day. If you've got comments, questions, or suggestions for the show, email them to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.